And so, Christmas season, I don't know if you guys listen to the radio a lot. I mean, once you start driving, you listen to the radio a lot. I don't know, Elliot, do you agree? Because you plug in your iPod or your phone, usually, but there are times when you just don't want to do it, even though it's like a 2-second stop setup, like you just plug it in. Sometimes, I don't know about Elliot, I'm lazy sometimes, so I just turn the radio on. And one thing I notice is if you listen to the radio a lot, the week of Thanksgiving, okay, Thanksgiving is always the last Thursday of November. The week of Thanksgiving, that's when they actually start playing Christmas music. Okay? And so Peggy, loving Christmas music, we programmed the, 97.1 in all of our cars. Okay? So it's there year round. The thing is, any time of the year besides December and the last week of November, it's like 80s and 90s hits. Okay? A lot of music that you guys don't really know. Unless you watch Glee. Okay? But, you know, you're not going to know. And then, but the last week of Thanksgiving, I realized, it's not even Thanksgiving Day. It's like, I think it was like the Monday before Thanksgiving, they already started playing Christmas music. I was like, oh, man. Now, one thing you notice about Christmas music, and this also happens if you go to the malls, like Fair Oaks Mall or Tyson Corner Mall, if you're there for more than an hour, you literally listen to every single version, like 50 versions of every Christmas song ever made in the history of mankind, okay? And a lot of it is really wrong, like really, really wrong. Like recently I discovered that this one song, it's called Santa Baby. It's a Christmas song by Madonna. I saw that and I was like, yeah, go figure, makes sense. But if you actually listen, go home and Google Santa Baby lyrics, okay? It's pretty messed up, okay? And it's basically like, I haven't been that bad, so you should, you know, come and give me a lot of stuff. Basically, that's the whole gist of the song. Now I thought, man, this is a pretty terrible song. And then because of that, and then this after that song, I listened to all the other songs on the radio. And I don't know if you guys really pay attention to the music that you listen to, but man, like I would say about 90 to 95% of the Christmas music is pretty terrible. I can recall, even last night after church, I was going home. This song, John Lennon wrote a Christmas song. I don't know if y'all knew that. Okay, John Lennon, he was a member of the Beatles. And if you listen to the lyrics, John Lennon was like a hardcore like atheist. Like, either there is no God or I don't care about God kind of guy. And he wrote a Christmas song. So you can only imagine what kind of song it is. It's basically like, I hope it's a good year. But I'm not really sure. You know, like there's, when you see this, when you listen to a song, it's basically like, it's hopelessness. There's no God, so I don't really know. Okay, so I'm like, man, this is a Christmas song? Okay, and so my thought after that, my third thought was, are there any good Christmas songs? And honestly, truth be told, the best Christmas songs, at least in my playlist, was the hymns. Okay? And it, like I told Jay, I only had two Christmas albums in my playlist, Shane and Shane. Okay, it's pretty decent. But even then, they covered a lot of like regular, just non-Christian Christmas music. Pretty good, but again, the message is like, I hope you have a good Christmas and it snows and have a lot of gifts. What the heck? What kind of message is that? The funniest thing is the other Christmas album I have is Glee Christmas. Don't judge me. Okay, Glee Christmas, thank you.
Lovely.
Okay, and I don't know if they made another one, but at least the one that I have, there's a lot, they cover a lot of hymns, a lot of the old school hymns, right? And if you listen to the lyrics, it's pretty amazing. And I was thinking about, as I was preparing this message, I was listening to the radio a lot, and one song that we'd never hear anymore, whether it be on the radio or at church, is a little ditty that goes like this. The lyric says this: joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her king. When was the last time we ever heard that song? I've never heard it this year, this season. I've never heard it on the radio. I've heard maybe the music. You know, I heard like the music, but never the whole thing. You know? I discovered the one Christmas song that no one ever covered. You know? So I think like Manifest should do a Christmas album. Joy to the world. See, Jay likes it. Jay will pre-order that junk right now. Okay. This is going on the internet. Alright. Anyway, so what was all that about? All that, just to say this, all the Christmas songs, except Joy to the World, covers every single aspect of the Christmas season. Presents, I don't know, presents, you know, snow, family, friends. But one thing that never gets covered is this aspect of joy. Right? But if we look in the Bible, the first Christmas, joy is all over the place. Right? And so that's what we are going to look at. That's why it's, you know, aptly titled Joy to the World. Right? So this aspect of joy during Christmas, joy not over simply physical, material things that we receive, but a deeper joy. And so the first lessons, there's three lessons that we want to go over. First lesson being this, that joy produces perseverance. Okay, joy produces perseverance. All right. This has been said, and it must be repeated again, that the Christian life is a marathon. It's not a sprint. Okay, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Okay, sprint is 50 meter dash or whatever. Whatever Jay used to do in track and field, okay? Shot put, okay? It has nothing to do with track and field, just kidding. Okay, sprint is like you're running short distance, okay? So the best way I can describe it is if you ever watch a football game, okay? You guys go home, watch football later today, right? And you turn it on, and you watch the guys on the line, the offensive line and the defensive line, but especially the defensive line. Okay, there's a lot of guys that are like really, they're all muscular to a point. But there's also guys who are pretty just big. Like they're just fat, honestly. They're just big and fat, you know? And you ask yourself, I don't know about you, but I ask myself, like, how are those people call themselves, like how are they called athletes? How are they paid millions of dollars every year? Because honestly, if I was that, my mom would make fun of me every day. You know, she would call me, you need to lose weight. And you're on TV and it's very bad. It makes the family look really bad, right? But there they are. They're really big and, you know, huge dudes. And if you actually watch the game carefully, these big guys, they would never finish. If you made them run a marathon, they would die. Okay? After like 5 minutes, I literally think that they would just die. But sprints, okay, short distances. These guys, as big as they are, maybe because they are so big, they can do short distances, like short bursts of speed. And so that's how they play football, right? Football is the game itself is designed to be just moments, momentary things. It's never one long fluid thing like basketball. Basketball is just one long fluid, constantly back and forth, you know. But football is you do a play and then it stops. You do a play, and then it stops, right? It's just moments of bursts, right? And so these big guys, that's how they can play the game of football, right? And so they don't ever have to. And so, like, for example, you'll never see, like, a nose tackle ever chase down a running back. It's just never going to happen unless, you know, he gets him at the line. Like, he's never going to chase him, you know, after, like, a 60-yard run. It's just not going to happen, right? But these guys, they can do short bursts, and they can, you know, go after the quarterback and stuff like that, right? So for girls, unless you watch football, it wouldn't make sense, okay? But in any case, okay, the only other example is track and field. Yeah, so like when you watch the Olympics, right, you're never going to watch a football player run like the 1,000-meter dash. It's just that would be comical, right? I think I would watch, if that happened, I would watch just purely out of comedic curiosity, right? But it would never be serious. So in any case, all that just to say, perseverance. Okay, perseverance is one of those Christian words that we kind of throw out around. A lot of people kind of don't understand what that means. Perseverance is another way to describe it is the old English is long suffering. That's perseverance. So if you look up the word perseverance, dictionary.com, one of the synonyms is long suffering. Okay, now long suffering. What is that? Okay, it's the simple idea that the Christian life, it doesn't happen in just a moment. Another way to say it is this: it's easier to be a Christian in 1 minute. I think if you were just in the moment and you know you were in a situation or you were in a you know really tough situation. Bad country or whatever, and you got a gun pulled on you and said, you know, and they were like, you know, if you don't deny Christ, I'm going to kill you, that kind of scenario. Not to say that's, you know, easy to do, but, you know, personally from my perspective, I think it's easier for me to muster up courage at that moment and say, no, I'm going to stand for Christ and take the bullet and die there. Versus, right, that's that moment of faith. Versus 50, 60, 70 years of Christian life. You see what I'm saying? So there is this huge difference that I think, especially for us young generation, we believe that the Christian life is just these momentary short bursts of faith. Right? When I was in high school, that's what I thought Christian life was. Just momentary short bursts of faith, and you just string them together. And hopefully you string them enough together that when you die, that God will be impressed. Right? So in my mind, the Christian life was a little bit like a football game. It would be like plays, short bursts of faith. But then as I grow older and I read the Bible, I realize, no. Right? Especially to the part where Paul says, the Christian life is like a marathon. Oh, okay. Right? It's one long, continuous, fluid thing. It's not short burst, right? The problem of marathon, right? I don't know if y'all ever, the closest experience that we'll ever have probably is running the mile in high school, right? I think I've shared how much I hated running the mile, right? The peak of my physical prowess happened in fourth grade, right? When I finished the mile in like 9 and a half or something like that. And I was like, I am the greatest. And it was all downhill from that, right? I never hit that mark ever again. In any case, right? One thing I noticed, right, running the mile, and I tried all kinds of strategies over the years, is that you gotta pace yourself. Because if you go like too hard, like at the beginning, you burn out super fast. So you end up walking the mile, and you finish with all the slow people, right? Where like your gym teacher is like this. Okay, that's bad, all right? That's happened a couple times, right? But marathon or a mile, right? You want to pace yourself, right? Now, bringing it back to this, the magi or the wise men, we don't know much, okay? We don't even know what country they're from, per se. We just know that they came from a region probably from the old Babylonian empire, which was modern. It's modern day Turkey, modern day Iraq area. Okay, and so they would have gone east from where they were to Israel. Okay, to visit Bethlehem. But we don't know exactly how many miles that they had to travel. Okay, but we do know a couple things. For example, we know that they traveled in the Middle East. Okay, we know, for example, that I know this is mind blowing, but they traveled on camels or horses, but they did not travel in cars. I know, it's a mind-blowing thing, right? So what can you know? All right, one thing we can know for sure, like we don't have to be experts, right? That if Peter and I were traveling to Philadelphia to see our grandma, right? Because I'm the older, I traveled in a car, and Peter got stuck with a donkey. Okay? No, let's be nicer. He got stuck with a camel, right? One thing we know for sure is that I'm going to get there much faster, okay? In a car to Philadelphia is about 2.5 hours, okay, depending on traffic, right? Peter will probably get there in like about a week, okay? So these wise men, these magi, it was a huge thing for them to go from where they were living to go to Bethlehem. Okay, I think we read this story and we're like, oh yeah, they travel to Israel, it's all good. No, just like, well, it's not up there, but, you know, a lot of these, like, Christmas pictures, right, you see the wise men, you know, they're traveling, you know, whether it be camels or horses, we don't know. But it's not a hop, skip, and a jump away. That's not them, but you get the idea. You get the general idea, right? They don't have air conditioning, you know. They don't have drive-through McDonald's. They don't have drive-through Starbucks. They don't have anything. All right, so whatever they want to eat or drink, they got to bring it with them, kind of like us to the retreat. All right, so I kind of feel that pain, right? But they have no cars, and so for them to go to Israel was a big commitment that they had to make. Right, and even while they're on the journey, they had to, you know, honestly, if I was them, I would at least one time ask, "Man, are we there yet? Seriously, this is taking a long time." Right. But they were able to do this because they have joy. There's joy, right? That there is this aspect of, man, there is this goal that I have, and that alone drives the journey. Whereas, it's basically like this. Elliot, if he had to drive in the snow 40 minutes with crazy traffic just to go pick up Caitlin, or just to be like, oh, you left your pen, like it fell out of your Bible in my car, so I gotta go give it to you. Right? Ellie has no problem driving 40 minutes in the snow. Right? Aspect of joy, this goal, right? Because hopefully Elliot likes to see Caitlin, right? Hopefully, right? In the same way, right, when I was dating Peggy, but Peggy was living in Maryland, very, very far away, okay? Pain in the butt to drive there, right? And for her, she had to drive down to Virginia, okay? So we always met around Texas Corner because it was in the middle of where we were living, right? And a lot of times she drove down to Centerville, and a lot of times I drove up to Maryland. But I gotta tell you, that drive to Maryland, however long it was, whatever traffic I might have faced, didn't really matter. Because I knew what I was going to, I knew what was at the end of that trip. I knew why I was going there. In the same way, these magi, these wise men, this long trip, however long and hard it might have been, I think it wasn't that bad because they were going there with the sense of goal that they knew what was at the end. They didn't know exactly how it's going to pan out, but all they knew was that based on what they saw in the Old Testament, that there was a great king. The king had come and we're going to go see him, you know, and it's going to be awesome, right? And it's... And so they are able to endure whatever hardships that they saw on the road, right? So this joy, joy produces perseverance. The second lesson that we see is Jesus is the greatest joy, obviously. You would think it's obvious, but I think it's one of those things where it needs to be reminded every year, honestly. And when I was preparing for this message, I needed that reminder too. It's funny and it's interesting because the wise men, right? If you read carefully, Jesus is actually the second king that they meet. The first king, there's absolutely no response in terms of the wise men. They present him no gifts. They present nothing. Right? So look at the way they treat Herod, and then look at the way they treat Jesus. When they go to Herod, they go with questions, you know? Questions and very formal, like, you know. But even then, you know, because they're from another country, there should have been some sort of, you know, diplomatic, like, oh, we bring you gifts because we come from another country, you know. And Herod, on his part, should have offered them at least a place to stay, you know, and say, oh, you're looking for Bethlehem. You go with the, you know, I'll give you some cops and they'll take you there so you don't get beat up by, you know, bad people or whatever, you know. Herod doesn't do that. And the Magi, the wise men, there is none of that either. There is just, all they do is they meet Herod and they say, oh, you're the king. Awesome. Guess what? We're looking for this Bethlehem area, looking for the king. And then Herod just goes, oh, yeah, it's over there. Let me draw you a map. Right? And then he gives it to him. And he prints out Google Maps and then he gives it to him. And then off they go. And that's about it. But the second king that they meet, right? It's a whole nother picture. It's a totally different picture. Whereas with Herod, there is this very distant kind of respect for the title. When they meet Jesus, there is this closeness, right? And notice even where they meet Herod. They meet him at his palace. Right, they meet him in his palace with stuff, all the stuff that kings have. They meet Jesus in a hole in the ground, literally a hole in the ground, with animal poop and stuff. Right? So Herod and Jesus, totally, it's black and white contrast. But even then, the way the Magi treat and see and respond to the king that they meet is totally different. Whereas with Herod, there is no connection. With Jesus, there is great joy. The phrase that just boggled my mind this whole week was, verse 10, they rejoice exceedingly with great joy. They rejoice hardcore with joy. They rejoice with joy. They had joy to the max. I don't know. Joy cubed. I don't know. All right? And so for them, all they know, and they don't really know much. The craziest thing is this. Compared to what we have, what we know about Jesus, they knew just a small picture. They had a little small picture of Jesus. We have a huge portrait, finished portrait of him. But that small picture of Jesus was enough for them to see him for who he is. That though he was not in a palace, though he was in a hole in the ground, though he had no servants except, you know, his parents, they still saw him as he was. They still saw him as he was. They looked past the external stuff. Because they knew Christ's kingship is connected to his identity. It's not what he does. It's not a title. That's him. He's the king. Whereas Herod is a king by title. Right? And even that title is not really his. Right? The Roman government had to, you know, give it to him. And so Herod is not really a king, per se. And they see that, right? But they see Jesus, this little baby, in a hole in the ground. And they see him, and they rejoice with exceeding joy, and they present to him gifts. Right? Myrrh, frankincense, and gold. Right? Frankincense. This is a funny word that my brother and I used to laugh about every Christmas. Frankincense. Mainly because we didn't know what it was. Frankincense. Hey, what's frankincense? Anyway. Frankincense, myrrh, and gold. And a lot of people, from the fact that Matthew records frankincense, myrrh, and gold, that they conclude, oh, there's only three magi. There are no three magi. Nowhere in the Bible does it say there's three magi. It just says there's more than one. There's a plural. So it's possible that they could have been two. It's possible that they could have been 15. All we know is that there's just more than one. And they brought him gifts of frankincense, myrrh, and gold. Maybe even more, but the three that are recorded are those. Right? And I'm going to put up a link on the Facebook page, and there's a reason why Matthew records those three, especially. Okay, and it's pretty cool how that works. Anyway, Jesus is their source of great joy. I wonder, right, for these guys, they had to travel probably 1,000 or more miles through a desert, through the Arabian desert, right? Where the desert in the winter, it's just cold all the time. In the summer, it's super hot all the time. They endured that. They endured that marathon of a trip, and they went and saw the king, and that was joy. That was the source of their joy, and they loved it, and it was awesome. And their response to the king, what is their response to the king? They fell down and worshiped him. They fell down and worshiped him. And that's important, because in the Bible, whenever people meet God, or whenever they are in his presence, their only response is to fall and worship. We see that in Exodus 33 with Moses. We see that in 2 Chronicles chapter 3 when they build the temple and they finish building the temple and the presence of God comes in. They're literally having worship service and the presence of God comes in. And it's so hardcore that some people just run away, right? And they just worship him. At the presence of the king, there is nothing we can do. No option other than one. Fall down and worship. Right? And that ties us into our third lesson, which is this. Worshiping Jesus is to thoroughly enjoy him. That's what it means. You know, sometimes you hear the phrase, you know, we need to enjoy Jesus. To enjoy Jesus. What does that mean? Enjoying Jesus is another way of saying worshiping him. Right? Because the way that God created us, the way he wired our brains and our hearts, is that whatever we enjoy, that is the object of our worship. Whatever we enjoy, that is the object of our worship. This is why human beings, we are so easily led astray, even if it's just momentary. Because we like to, we want constant, constantly new things and better things and whatever. And so whatever it is that you find your joy, or whatever it is that you enjoy, that is what you worship. And when I say enjoy, I don't mean just, like, I enjoy barbecue chips. But it's not like, oh my gosh. You know, like, I'm not eating it, like, you know. Like, I love Peruvian chicken. Super chicken, right? Elliot, testify, super chicken, right? But we're not, like Elliot, I mean, okay, Elliot was a little bit kind of hardcore, okay? I mean, I never seen Elliot move so fast in my life until I went to super chicken. He didn't even say anything. That was like the quietest conversation I had with Elliot. He goes, let's pray. And then I said, as soon as I said amen, he finished his whole meal after even before I finished my second. Okay. But we're not like worshiping the chicken. It's not like, oh my gosh, this is so good, we need to go bow down before the presence of the chicken oven. Or whether it be sports, technology, money, popularity, whatever you have. I'm not saying, you know, those moments where like, oh yeah, you know, you care about your friend or because, you know, they're in a situation, whatever. But what we're talking about here in terms of enjoyment, thorough enjoyment, is something to the something like family. As much as your family sometimes pisses you off or kind of, you know, rub you the wrong way, you still like being in their presence. You still like being with them because they're your family. You enjoy their presence. Right? As much as my brother sometimes annoys me, and I'm sure I annoy him, I still enjoy his presence. I still trust his movie criticism over anybody else on the planet. Right? If everyone says, oh, that movie is terrible, but if he says it's okay, I'm going to go watch it. Right? That's the joy that I'm talking about. Right? So whatever we thoroughly enjoy, and there's no real concrete way for me to describe this other than to say the thing that you enjoy is the thing that you think about the most during the course of a day. So just take a moment and think about, man, what is it that I think about most of the day? Because that, whether you like it or not, whether you know it or not, is what you enjoy the most. Some of you guys might be surprised or shocked, you know, that it might be like schoolwork. Like, oh my gosh, that's all I think about. Yeah, then, well, you enjoy schoolwork. As much as you might be like, oh, I hate doing schoolwork. Well, it's on your mind 24/7. In some twisted, weird, you know, way, you know, you need to be prayed for. You need Jesus to redeem that, right? But, you know, that's what you enjoy, right? I'm not going to say who, but, you know, there was some people in this church, you know, there was a time when we just thought about Facebook all the time, 24/7. I think the quote was, what was the quote? It, you know, I asked, what would happen if Jesus took away Facebook? I would die. That person shall remain nameless. Yeah, I'm trying to avoid eye contact. Okay. right? That's what you worship. Whatever you thoroughly enjoy, that's what you worship. And so Jesus then, obviously, the point here being the object. That's what, you know, that's the reason that drove the wise men. Because they thoroughly enjoyed him. How? Why? Because even on the journey, right, what are they thinking about? Man, we're going to go meet the king. Man, we're going to go meet the king. Right? I would imagine if somehow, like, you got invited to the White House, you know, whether you're driving into D.C. or you have to take the metro in, you know, those are very unpleasant experiences, by the way, right? It doesn't matter, because, yo, I get to go to the White House. I get to go to the White House. I get to meet the president. That's a pretty big thing. And so for these magi, they traveled physical miles. For us, we don't have to do that. However, there is, I think, in our hearts, a distance that we must travel. Are we thoroughly enjoying Jesus? Especially in this season. Is Jesus the one that we're thinking about? Especially in this season, is, you know, if we can have a printout of your of what you think about in a day, and we compare it to your friend who is not a Christian, would there be any significant difference? Right. So worshiping Jesus means to enjoy Him. The great story of Christmas is that Jesus came as Emmanuel, one of the few Hebrew words that everyone knows, which means simply God with us. You guys ever wonder why Jesus has to be called Emmanuel, God with us? Why is that such a big difference? It's because this, in the Bible, in Psalm 16:11, Psalm 73:28, those verses are worthy of memory. Right? Psalm 16:11 simply says, in His right hand there are pleasures forevermore. Psalm 16:11, right? At His right hand there are pleasures forevermore. Psalm 73:28 simply says this, the nearness of my God is for my good. Right? And so until Jesus came, there was no access to the presence of God. There was no way in. When Jesus came, the presence of God came to us. Why is that such a big deal? Because through Jesus, now we finally have access to this joy. We can tap into this joy. At His right hand, there are pleasures forevermore. So the great story of Christmas is that Jesus came as our Emmanuel, God with us, so that we may thoroughly worship Him in joy. Or, put another way, so that we may thoroughly enjoy Him forever. Let's pray.